This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Now, Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to this Free For All Friday, and I'm calling it an alternative Free For All Friday. Once again, our phone lines are not working. The elves got in there and we're having trouble getting them back online. But you know, as they say, necessity is the mother of invention. So you can text us and we will read your texts on the air. And actually, you know what? That is really the 21st century way to do it. Maybe we'll even get some younger listeners. We know that a lot of younger people really don't like the phone. They find the phone obtrusive. They'd rather be texting. I am a proponent of doing everything always. So why not? But anyway, here, get your pencils ready. Oh my God, a pencil, or you can tap it into your device. So the text number is 866-740-4740. And I will be giving it again periodically, but let me repeat that again. The text number is 866-740-4740. That's easy to remember. And again, text us. And maybe going forward, when we will have our phones back, you can still text us because, our fingers have to be ready for just about everything. So once again, we are going to have three fascinating Zoomerites talking and giving their take, our take, plus me. And today we have Liz West, who is the host of the Afternoon Express. We've got Dean Holland, who is an entertainer and radio host whom you hear on both our Zoomer stations. And we have Tasha Carradine, who is sometime fill-in host on Fight Back. She is also a lawyer and commentator and columnist and political activist. So, Tasha wears many hats on her lovely head, and thank you all for joining us. Hi, everyone.
Hey, great to be here.
Happy Friday.
Thank you.
Happy Friday.
I just heard in Kathy's news that today is going to be the busiest shopping day, so I'm glad I'm not planning on doing that. Where is everyone with their Christmas shopping? Liz.
I'm so delinquent. It's terrible. You know, usually, Libby, I have got everything organized by this time. I usually do a lot of shopping online and order everything so it arrives before Christmas. And this year, I sort of fell off the wagon. My daughter just wants money for Christmas.
We've talked about that.
Yeah. So I did order her something on Poshmark, a designer bling thing that she'd like. I hope it gets here before then. But I'm in Montreal this weekend, so I think I'm going to do some shopping there. It's always fun.
It is always fun. Liz, how are you doing?
Well, I think Tasha and I have done a body swap because I'm usually, it's Christmas and I better get to it. But this year, my daughter, who's 18, gave me a very precise list of what to get. Not outrageous stuff, but kind of like, don't buy me. If it's not this, don't get me anything. Thank you. So that was easy, right? That was easy.
That's easy. That sounds a little passive aggressive to me.
Well, she's studying environmental science. So in her mind, don't waste. Don't get me something that I'm not going to use because that's a waste, Mom. But I hear what you're saying. And then my son we basically already got his presents because He's like, I need to use the hockey stick now. And do you mind? So, and I don't want anything else. So it, and at this stage, it's like, I feel like, I just can't bring myself to buy tchotchkes or like dust collectors or things that for the sake of it.
Yeah.
I might bake some cookies though, Libby, and they might, maybe they'd even be coming your way if I could get my act together this weekend.
Okay. Okay. Actually, Liz, I have a little homemade care package for you.
And Scott, now I feel
your husband. So, and I brought that in this morning. It's not very Christmassy, but I think it'll be good. Dean, so where are you on the Christmas show?
Well, we're right in the middle as well. We've got four kids. Two don't live at home anymore. One of them's out in BC. We won't even see him this Christmas. And because our youngest is 16, it's a whole different kettle of fish now. It's just a whole lot more relaxed. And while we do have a few things, I have to admit our 18-year-old, he came to the group chat. We have a group chat between the six of us and said, you know what? This is what I think we should do. I think we should like forego all this before Christmas stuff, and we should all go shopping on Boxing Day and get everything cheaper.
Ooh, well, what a good kid.
Boxing Day started after Halloween, I think. So,
yeah,
and they keep, it's misleading about when you're going to get a deal. Now, I went to the mall yesterday because I was off, and I figured that if I got there before noon, which I did, it would not be crowded, and it was not. But I had two bad experiences with the electronic and online shopping. One of them, I was in a big retailer and I refused to shop online because they make you give them all your information. But I was happy to put my husband's information in, and then they sent one thing that didn't fit, and I thought, okay, I'm gonna go, and I got his credit card so we could put money back on it. Literally, even with the barcode, it took the person at the cash, I don't know, 10 minutes to find. Like, normally I just forward it, you pull it up, it's there. It was a nightmare getting it because they don't like it if you don't give them all of your information. And the other thing, I went to a retailer. I like their stuff a lot, multinational, Zara. And literally there's self-checkout. There were two young men at caches. I went to one of these caches. He took me to the self-checkout, rolling his eyes, and then I said, I want a printed receipt. And I had my reasons, right? I thought this kid was going to spit at me. Just such bad behavior.
And you should have asked him to count out change for you as well,
Libby. Yeah, that would have been fun.
Oh, well, actually, apparently he said that they only have these caches for cash. I wasn't going to pay with cash, but I wanted a printed receipt, which is my right. And wow. And they make it sound like they're being, you know, ecological, but they're just being nasty. So,
you know, I hate self-checkout, Libby. I will say, I think if I was getting a discount, if someone said to me, you get, you know, a dollar or two off or whatever, if you'd use the self-checkout, I'd be like, okay, but you're getting less service and paying the same thing. What is the point of that? And inevitably, half the time it doesn't work and you have to go find a person anyway.
Well, at the supermarket, they have a person because the one thing I say is if there's a lineup at the cash, I will self-checkout things that have a barcode. I am not starting to weigh them and look for the code. It's like Galen Weston has to pay me for that. And
exactly.
I make more than minimum wage, right? But there's usually a person there. And if there isn't, it's like, I'm not doing that. Sorry. But even with this really nasty kid, I said, by the way, it looks like they're trying to get rid of your job. And
did you?
Well, like he's being so nasty. He was standing at the live cash doing nothing except being rude to me.
What did he say when you said that?
He said, oh, no, I said, yeah, I was like, yeah, just wait, kid. But
well, you know what, Libby?
Yeah.
I think that what you're pointing out is that this, something I've noticed as well, is that the whole idea of customer service mm-hmm. and the front-facing, you know, staff, which I'm pretty sure all of the people on this call, this panel have experienced as a young person, how you treat people. You know, when I started, one of my big first jobs was at McDonald's. And one of the philosophies that they drum into you is that the customer is always right. And that's something I've carried through to this day because it's actually completely accurate. The customer is always right. And when they have these self-checkouts, and I find it in the grocery store as well, when I go to an actual cashier, and I love doing both, I don't care.
Yeah.
I find there's a vacancy in the eyes of the cashier that didn't used to exist. The one that, like the idea of like caring about what you're doing,
yeah.
In wanting to improve the customer experience. Because really the only reason anybody has a job is because of the customer. In this case, it was you. And what a great opportunity. And I don't want to sound like a Pollyanna, but what a great opportunity for this individual that you dealt with yesterday to say, listen, you know what? I'm so glad you want that because, frankly, I'm not doing anything. What? Let's ring in your purchase. Let's take care of you today. Did you have a good experience? You know, and I mean, that's way more interesting than standing, like Matt, you know, counting sheep in your head because you have nothing to do. But it's like I don't know if customer service is something that's going to disappear altogether as we become more automated. People are buying online, less interaction. But boy, oh boy, is it an important skill, especially in business.
Well, I have to say it's how I got one of my early jobs. I have to tell you because I was working part time at a delicatessen in Jackson Square in Hamilton, and one day I had somebody slip me a note. And she didn't want to get me in trouble. And she worked at a bank. And she said, would you like a job? And and she picked me out of the line because of my customer service. And so when
oh
I went
God.
Over, the, when
oh
I went over to the bank.
Yeah. Ding. The same thing happened to me.
Really?
Wow. I worked at McDonald's. I was a cashier. And one day this woman came in. And she goes, you know what? You should be working at my bank. I'm going to, I want you to
was
apply
it the
to
same
the
woman?
At the bank. And I ended up going from cashier at McDonald's to bank teller.
Well, that's basically, I worked as a bank teller, and that's why they hired, and I was astonished. And I
Me
said,
too.
I don't know anything about banking. And she said,
that was how they recruited people, apparently. Like, you know, that's really interesting.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting?
And I have to tell you, I'll brag a little bit. They had a contest. The bank had a contest, not a contest. They had a campaign going about a year later where they identify 10 tellers across Canada once a week for about 2 months. And I got one of these accolades and $100 in my bank account back in 1990 because I was identified as one of the top tellers in Canada for that week.
Wow.
And it was based on customer service. And
I
so,
love it.
You know,
okay, I have to tell a bank story then because
please.
Recently I went into the bank and they were playing, it was like disco music. I was wondering what is going on here. The banks, if you want to find a place where customer service has completely gone downhill, it is banks, partly because so many fewer people patronize them. But the model that they are adopting, and in fact, two banks I went to, because I took my mother to her bank as well, the same thing was going on. They were playing, you know, basically pop music in the bank as if it was a store, as if when you go into a retail store in the Eaton Center or wherever. And one of the tellers was wearing a t-shirt with the logo of the bank on it. No tie, no like even a regular collared shirt, but looked completely disaffected. The whole atmosphere was super casual and not... I don't know if that's supposed to be inviting for younger people, but it certainly wasn't inviting for me. And I'm not a fuddy-duddy, but I stood there and thought, I'm sorry, this is just not dignified service in a bank. Maybe I'm missing something.
No, you're not. You're not. But I have a good story to counterbalance, and that is...
Good.
unless I'm forgetting someone or an institution, the last Canadian department store standing... Simon's. So yesterday's trip, I also went to Simon's. Now, I've use them online. And even online, their customer service is fantastic. You call, they answer the phone, they answer your question. But in person, they have stores in Toronto now, and their customer service is lovely. Anyway.
And what makes it that for you, Libby? What is it that
the
they
people,
do that's
like
different?
That you find a person, the person helps you and is nice. I mean, what you used to find in other stores, right? But you don't anymore. No vacant looks. The other thing in some of those big chain stores that have recently been renovated. Now, I'm a pretty small person. A change room, you cannot even turn around. I cannot turn around. And this one, we know that most of the people in Canada now are actually quite large. To go into a bricks and mortar store, because you don't want to clog things up by ordering things that don't fit. It's just and the vacant looks and the eye rolling. It's a whole different thing at Simon's, a Canadian department store. Silence.
I can't help wonder if it has something to do with pride of workplace, you know, because I've sometimes suggested to my kids when I look at our downtown, historic downtown core of Collingwood where I live, and I think, you know, at one point all of those shops were probably owned by families that might have lived upstairs, you know, in the upper level. And I think that then when you have that, there's a real pride of job. But, you know, I think if you don't like your job, it's hard to get that enthusiasm behind it. And maybe there's too much of that.
I think it's also cultural. I've been to Japan twice in the last couple of years, and I will tell you, service is night and day what you get here.
Oh, I'm sure.
People there in every job, no matter what it is, whether it's a McDonald's, whether it's any other food counter, a department store, they will serve you with a smile. They will wrap things happily for you, you know, beautifully. There's always a sense of decorum. It really, whether it's fake or not, whether they're doing it just for their job, it makes it so pleasant, mm-hmm. so much more pleasant. And there's a cultural expectation that people will just behave in that sort of more proper way and engage with the customer. Like Liz, like you said, the customer is always right. And the customer's interest comes first. And you want to make them happy. And you really feel that wherever you go. And it is really nice. So I think maybe here we've just gotten a bit, you know, too casual as a society and too, dismissive of some of the jobs that really, honestly, are actually important. They, you know, serving customers is an art. It's also an entry job for many young people. They learn how to be civil mm-hmm. to other people, right? And if we're not teaching that at that level, then we're going to lose it throughout our culture.
Okay. Before we take our first break, so there's a Japanese egg place down the street from us here at the Zoomerplex. And I think the young people who work there are Japanese. And I have to say, the customer service there is very different from what we've been describing. And it's great. I want to read a few texts before we take our first break. And this is John from Fort Erie. And he says that he just got the last of his Christmas cards in the mail. I'm assuming he means he put them in the mail. And he's wondering, this is something to think about for after the break, if I am one of the very few who still mails out cards. I am 69, so it's an old habit I still enjoy. I can tell you my husband sends Christmas cards. And actually, one of the things I had to get a few weeks ago when I went to the pharmacy was stamps. And I was shocked at what a stamp costs these days. But I did. I bought stamps. And my Doug still sends Christmas cards. Let's get to another text before we take this break. And this is Sandy from Vaughan. Just wants to remind people that they need to wear reflective clothing while walking. I'm a courier, and I honestly have seen so many older people thinking it's my fault I can't see them. Okay, that is a bit of a sobering thought to end on. So people, let me give you that text line again. It is 866-740-4740. We're taking a break, and we will come back with more of this alt Free for All Friday.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio. Heard weekdays from noon to one. Oh, no. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back to our alt Free for All Friday. We still don't have phones, but we do have text. And the text number is 866-740-4740. And we also have some fascinating people. We have Liz West, who is the host of the Afternoon Express. We have Dean Holland, who is a radio host and entertainer. And we have Tasha Carradin, who is a radio host, a lawyer, a commentator, a political activist, and a columnist. So, everyone, thank you for joining us. And we've been talking about customer service and Christmas shopping. And before we went to break, the last caller asked if he wanted to know if he was the last person who sends Christmas cards. And I can tell him for sure he's not, because my husband sends Christmas cards and I buy stamps. So there you go. But we do have to get to some more serious and upsetting topics. And of course, this week was dominated by the Bondi Beach massacre in Australia. And I say, finally, politicians here from all levels of government finally seem to react in an appropriate way, because they certainly haven't, in my opinion. In the past, they have abetted all kinds of illegal actions, intimidation, even assault on these so-called anti-Israel, anti-Semitic protests, and that's where it ends. But we have a text from Mike in Brantford, and he says, leaders like Carney and Chow are responsible for open season on our Jewish citizens. Chow is self-explanatory. Yeah, we know that. Carney recognized Palestine, and this sends a green light to Hamas thugs with their clearly illegal protests and violence. And, you know, that's what I say. They have rebranded anti-Semitism, call it anti-Israel. Never mind that people here have no say on what happens there. And Mike in Brantford says, P.S., I am not Jewish or Hebrew. So let's talk about that massacre that happened last Sunday. Tasha, what do you think of the response?
Well, I mean, the massacre, first of all, was so horrible. The accounts that came out of it, too, of people feeling, you know, they were literally sitting ducks. They were just being mowed down at a festival. A 10-year-old girl was one of the people who lost their lives. I mean, it is absolutely horrific. And it's probably the most blatant, I think. You know, it is completely blatant as an attack. There's no getting around what this was. This was an attempt to kill Jews in Australia. It was an attempt to kill them at a moment of celebration. It was a vicious, vicious attack. And I think that, you know, politicians have spoken up about it. And, you know, yes, Mark Carney did make a statement the day of as well, which he absolutely should. And it is, you know, if there have been so many wake up calls in the last 2 years, this is the most horrific one of all, and it has to stop. It has to shake people out of their torpor. And I agree with the caller, or the texter, who said that, you know, our politicians have enabled the state of affairs by turning a blind eye to protests on our streets, to the impact on citizens, senior citizens, you know, who are too afraid to leave their nursing home because somebody is screaming obscenities outside, calling them baby killers and this kind of thing. I mean, it's just, we have lost all sense of what our country is about, and the fact that we are here. All of us are here together. We need to live in civil peace. People have their opinions. It's fine. But you cannot terrorize your fellow citizens. You cannot inflict anti-Semitic hate on people. It is just unacceptable. So if there's anything good, I hate to say that, coming out of this horrible attack, it is that maybe finally people will say, okay, enough. I know a resolution was passed this week at City Council. Mike Cole had a motion to strike an anti-Semitic task force. I mean, I think we need more than a task force. We just need to enforce the laws that are there, quite frankly.
Well, exactly.
Against people who do this. Yeah.
And there's,
the police have to do it. Everyone has to do it.
Well, the levels of government, like they just keep blaming each other.
Correct.
The police say they don't have enough backup from local politicians. The local politicians say, oh, we have nothing to do with who gets charged. Then the provincial government says they don't have the right laws. And the federal government says, oh, okay, a new law is in the works. But a lot of people say, okay, you know what? If you enforce the laws that are on the books, that would be good. Dean, what's your take?
You know, I think a lot about this. Even before this happened, I was brought up Catholic. My wife was not, but another Christian religion. And we have Jewish friends who we share driving with all the time. And I know we look to our politicians a lot. I have continually tried to think of what I can do on a very grassroots level, you know, I can't help but wonder, because my kids come to me and they go, like, she says, I don't understand why this happens. She says, yes, we have friends who are different religions and we have different things that we celebrate, but why does this happen? And I struggle to give her an answer to this, why? Because I wasn't brought up that way. We haven't brought up our children that way. And again, I keep looking at myself thinking, is there something that I can do? Is there something that I can do to broaden just us embracing each other rather than capitalizing on differences that we have? I don't know. I struggle with it internally myself.
Liz?
Yeah, I mean, hearing about mass killings in public space anywhere, anytime is very unnerving, because it just shows how vulnerable people are in society. And my thoughts go to, we can spend our time on dealing with the crime after it's occurred, but we can also spend our time working on prevention and education and drilling down on why this kind of hatred exists, why people feel that they are drawn to the kind of information or propaganda that creates hate and celebrates, violent action against people. And, because we can, as much as we can put people in jail and throw away the key, it doesn't prevent the next event from happening. I don't think that people are the perpetrators are taking into consideration what will happen to them if they're caught. So many times people are dead after they go on a shooting spree like this. And in this case, I think one's dead, one's alive, father and son. I mean, it's a head scratcher. How does this even happen? How do these plans get made? How do families and friends not know that it's happening? What are the warning signs, the signals? And how, as a society, do we figure out how to heal and move forward and prevent the problem from occurring versus just the Band-Aid solution of the legal ramifications?
Well, I think our education system is riddled with it from
it
the
is, but-
top to the bottom, whether it is in our school boards where the teachers feel this way, a lot of them. It's part of we now have it both from the left and from the right in our school systems. It is from the so-called progressive left. The universities are almost, people who are even, mildly conservative are afraid to air their views in universities, Tasha. And that doesn't even account for heavy-duty Islamic radicalization, which happens online and which apparently happened in the Philippines for the father-son duo responsible for Bondi Beach.
Yeah, no, I personal experience of that, I can relate. I just wanted to respond first, and I will, to Liz's point about, you know, throwing people in jail after an event happens. Obviously, you don't want the event to happen, but I think it's like broken window theory that was used in New York City to curb crime in the 80s and 90s. The idea that if you let small things, bad things happen, big bad things will happen. And I think the small bad things in Australia specifically were happening for 2 years. A lot of the similar stuff we've witnessed here, you know, attacking Jewish schools, going through neighborhoods, terrorizing Jewish people where they live. You allow that, and you enable that to allow that to happen. You basically create a state of lawlessness where things, just people think they can get away with anything. And that's not to say that this would prevent every single attack, this horrific attacks, but these horrific attacks are kind of at the top of a pyramid of a whole bunch of other bad things that we allow to go forward. If people realize that they just can't do that, it's not acceptable in our society, it is not something that is condoned, it's not allowed, then I think you would see, certainly you'd see less of that, which is the daily, you know, problems that so many Jewish people live with, and you would possibly see less of the top of the pyramid. So that's my thought there. With regard to the schools, 100%. I think, you know, it's not just universities; it's also the school system in general, and it's been sort of twinned with this narrative of decolonization in the West. This narrative of decolonization has been around since the 1950s, growing in terms of decolonizing parts of the world, like Africa and others that were colonized by Western powers. But it's also been applied now within our societies here to say, you know, we're all guests on our own, on our land here. If we weren't indigenous people, you know, we don't have a right to be here. That's the most extreme view of it. But it goes to this idea, it's applied now to Israel to say that there should be, that this is an example of colonization, right? And so twinning those two things has allowed curriculum leaders and others in North America, and particularly in Canada, to talk about Israel in that context. And of course, the kids who think, you know, colonization is bad, immediately their mind goes, well, of course, then Israel's a colonizer state, it's bad. It's really insidious. And I think unpacking that and saying, look, the decolonization narrative is one that's being used today to really subvert a lot of countries, including Canada, to say that people here, you know, don't have a right to be here, and that we, you know, Western culture is bad. And we have to stop that too, because it makes us a self-hating country. And a self-hating country won't stand up to foreign attacks. It won't stand up to foreign powers. It won't defend itself. It won't have any pride or patriotism. Why should you, if you hate your own country for being bad to people? We have to stop that. You can recognize ills of the past without demonizing people who are here today. And I think we have to strike that better balance. And that would also help with the whole conversation around Israel.
And you know, Israel, Jews have been in Israel, literally
forever.
Going back to the Bible. And when they talk about decolonization, yeah. So Israel was created before that. The territory was part of the British Empire. It was a British mandate. Before it was a British Empire, it was part of the Ottoman Empire, Turkish Empire, which was not native there, and was responsible for a lot of slaughter, and before that, various other dynasties. So the people who you know, take part in these demonstrations, they are usually completely ignorant. I mean, Israel was established in 1948, and you have a lot of people saying, go back to 1948. I'm saying, what, you want the British Empire? Really? I mean, they just have not got a clue about the history. But yeah, Tasha, I mean, it's this kind of call. And I mean, here in Canada, you know, we had Justin Trudeau saying we are responsible for genocide. Well,
right.
No wonder Canadians, you know, Liz, what do you think of that?
Yeah, well, when I think about, I don't think that, okay, this is what I think. I think you need strong leaders to take strong positions to lead people forward. And I think that Justin Trudeau was just far too wishy-washy and sort of sat in the, you know, we need to take blame and feel bad and, you know, like take the heat. And it, I think that is part of the reason why so many young people are feeling confused and questioning a lot of, you know, what they learn in school or what they don't learn, because there's so much information they're being fed through other channels now, that we're it's a bit of a hot mess right now.
Yeah. And, you know, for all that we see these young university students like really being anti-Jewish, anti-Israel, you know, in terms of voting intentions, they're going conservative, not liberal, Dean.
Yeah, you know what? I'm still sitting here. I'm sorry. I am certainly not an authority on Jewish history, and I am listening to this conversation, and I am still shaking my head, and I just, it's a little bit naive disbelief, you know, that these types of, this type of hatred still exists in regards to something that Liz was saying earlier. It does seem that we're far too reactionary to things. You know, you read these gun clawbacks and these gun buybacks. They seem to only happen when there is a when there's a mass shooting, and then everything seems to settle again, and then we seem to wait for the next one to do something about it. Which you know, and again, I can't help but again still look at a grassroots level. There clearly is not enough. There's not enough police out there to police all of this stuff. And so I still believe that some of it has to come from my level, you know, on a community base. You know, I have to live it and believe it and live by example, because I can't just rely on the police to fix everything.
Okay. Before we go to our second break, I'm going to cavil a little bit. I got a nice email from listeners in Minneapolis, and I have to say, there was a time in my life when I lived in Minneapolis and I was a reporter, Channel 5 Eyewitness News. We're in the jailer.
Really?
Yes,
I love it.
Yes. Yes. Wow. We covered the 5-state area, and we had an airplane. We had a chopper. And I even once reported, did a live shot from the Goodyear blimp. Okay.
Libby. Wow. Libby.
I mean, talk about high points of the career. So, I actually found relatives in the Twin Cities. It's very interesting. And before the pandemic, Doug and I had a really interesting visit there. And we know for sure they're relatives, because of names and because of they come from the same town way back that my dad came from. But we don't know exactly how we're related. Okay, so that's Libby's Minneapolis. Minneapolis, St. Paul, by the way, the Twin Cities. Actually, my station was in St. Paul. So avid listeners from Minneapolis. Yes. Texted in and said, we really appreciate your medical panel. There's nothing like it in our listening area. And we tell it like it is here from Maureen and Brian. And I have to say, we have like the best medical people on our medical panel. And I think that is just so useful for so many people. But yeah, I'm just planting that little seed before we take a break, and maybe we talk a bit about that when we come back.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. Fight Back with Libby Znaimer on Zoomer Radio.
Welcome back. Well, we ended the last segment with a really nice email from Maureen and Brian in Minneapolis, my old stomping ground, talking about our medical panel and how much they enjoy it. And we enjoy it and get a lot of very useful information from it as well. And before I kick off this last segment, I want to read a lovely text that I just got from Irene in Etobicoke. And it says, good afternoon. Firstly, thank you for doing this program. So thanks to everyone. I love it. It's my everyday choice of listening. Christmas is different for me now at 75. I no longer shop for gifts, as we at this age have almost everything. And frankly, most people have too much stuff.
and we have no young children in our family of three. I do prepare our Christmas meal. All cooking and baking is homemade from fresh materials. Yes, no prepackaged other than spices. I still love sending cards, as expensive as it has become now. Tell me about it. And at this time, you can't call everyone at Christmas as they're busy, so a note that arrives in the mail, in my opinion, is still valued. Merry Christmas to all. Isn't that a nice note, Liz?
I love that. I just got a great Christmas card yesterday from someone, sort of a newer friend. The best part, though, is like, I don't, like, you can send them and just sign your name, and then it's kind of like you sent it. It's nice, but she wrote this lovely, like, heartfelt thought. I think she pulled something from a piece of literature around Christmas. Anyway, it was just so delightful that I thought, well, that's what it's all about. And I get that she is sending a card because she loves sending cards. I mean, sending cards is really for the sender more than the receiver. That's how I feel.
Is that Tasha?
I love receiving cards. I put them on my mantelpiece. It's fewer and fewer every year, though, it seems. The political ones keep arriving, but they're always there. But fewer people send cards. I open the e-cards too, get those, more and more of those, the balance tips. I will say I'm guilty of not sending out cards anymore myself. I used to send out a lot of cards, and maybe I should get back in the habit after this conversation, because it is a joy to receive them, absolutely.
It is something that I have wanted to get in the habit of doing for a number of years. So, Libby, you have inspired me.
There you go.
I absolutely want to get back to it. We have a wire, it's a metal wreath that we've had that for the last 2 years hasn't even gone up on the wall, because that wreath is designed for you to put in all the cards that you receive. And it kind of, it makes a wreath after you stick in all the cards. And we receive fewer and fewer all the time. I love receiving cards, so I need to get back into it. And you can tell me the best place to buy stamps, Libby.
The post office. But I have to say that, cards are a dying art, I would say, and I don't send them. And probably never have, but they're also, it's a really good way, even if you just sign it, to kind of stay in touch with somebody. It's like, I still think of you, you're still on my list, even if I haven't called you in the last year, or whatever it is. Is that a valid point, Liz?
I think, you know what? I truly think there's people who send cards, and there's people who don't send cards. We're like literally in two distinct groups. And I'm with, like, Tasha and Dean, I'm with you. I get the cards. Oh, I should send cards. I really need to get back to sending cards. I am not sending cards. We're not sending cards. It's just one of the, you know, and it's a lovely tradition, but it's a dying art. And as people die, we will lose this altogether. Like, I think there will come a time when there will be no more Christmas cards being sent. It's too bad. It's really nice, but it's like my daughter would say, it's a waste of paper. Ooh. It's a waste of money on a stamp. You know, blah blah blah.
Oh, you're keeping
that
in business.
All three of you are getting a card when the show is done.
No.
Well, you know,
too. This is the other issue, is the mail, right? Just the mail itself. I agree with you, Liz. People use mail less and less and less. Post office is in dire straits. So the possibility of sending a card, then that changes it as well. You can't physically send it unless you courier it or whatnot.
Well, yeah, this might be the last year that we get a card in the mail at home for those of us who still get that. But I have to say, those e-cards, it's not the same for me. I see an e-card and it's like, oh, another thing to open. And unless it's a party invitation, I don't care.
Well, if I may vindicate myself, I have to tell you that I have been doing a ton of holiday baking from scratch.
Ooh.
Ooh. Oh, now we're talking. Are you bringing it in?
I am bringing some in. You'll have some over the holidays. I'm bringing it in. You'll all have some holiday baking.
Wait a minute.
That's
nice.
I just got this just in from Helen, who calls often.
And I'm going to read this without fact-checking because it doesn't sound real. Because she says, Shoppers Drug Mart puts stamps on sale this time of year, really? And it's like, I don't know. That's where I got Doug's stamps at a Canada Post in a Shoppers. They certainly were not on sale, but hey, people, if you want to
go on sale,
I don't think that's allowed. Possible.
Yeah, it's not allowed. It can't.
I've never heard of
your taxes don't go on sale.
Okay, and Helen, sorry, you can't call in to defend what you just told me. But if you see a sign,
hey, Libby, I will say the key to getting good affordable Christmas cards is buying them on Boxing Day. It's a great time to buy them.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be, it started, I think, Boxing Day started with just Christmas ornaments and seasonal things, and they went on really good sales.
Yeah, wrapping paper. Gets great deals. Great deals on wrapping paper.
I remember growing up in my very Jewish household, like we would have the on sale Santa napkins for years. I miss them. Yeah.
Yeah.
You can get some this year. They're out there, Libby. They're still there.
thanks. I have slightly more elevated taste these days. But Helen, if you want to text in a sign or placard that actually shows like an ad for on sale stamps, then we'll be happy to look at it. But I don't know. The panel is skeptical about that. Okay.
Yeah. I don't think they go on sale.
No.
And I'll just add that with the strike this year, that was a complete turnoff to me to plan on mailing anything through Canada Post.
Yeah.
They have special stamps at Christmas, and they do have, you know, I guess people used to collect them, but now it's just different designs. So maybe that's what Helen means by going on sale, that they have different designs specifically for Christmas. But I don't think they're any cheaper.
Yeah. Oh, no. Helen texted back, watch the flyers. Thanks, Helen.
Okay. We will.
And
okay. Like, okay. So then we have to know, can I buy them now and use them for the rest of the year?
For sure.
Save on stamps?
Oh, that I'm sure you can.
Ask Helen about that.
Okay, but wait a minute. What are you going to use stamps on? What are you sending in the mail, Liz, if
I
may ask?
Well, I don't know. But, you know, just in case. My mother is a big fan of mail. She's a big fan of mail. I disappoint her all the time. But she loves a card and, you know, I don't know. That's what I said. Why I said it's, well, it's for the... some people, you love receiving it, but it doesn't mean you send them, right?
Well, exactly. And your mother is at this stage not expecting to receive it from you.
Well, she's going to give me the look. I know I'm going to still get the look. I usually hand people cards. It's not like I don't give Christmas cards, but generally I'll put a nice card with their gift. Or if I'm going to a house party or something, I bring a card. Like, I have nothing against cards. But she's going to give me the look. She does. All I wanted was for you to send me a Christmas card.
I got to say that receiving
terrible
a card
daughter.
In
okay,
the
I just
mail
opened
really
one.
Is a wonderful thing, because what do we usually find in the mailbox? We usually find, you know, bills and flyers and this and that. And so, you know, reaching in there and finding a colored envelope that is with a handwritten, you know, my mother-in-law always sends everybody a birthday card, and it's always got a handwritten label on it. And it is lovely. So, you know, I need to be part of that, I think.
Yeah, I just opened my Christmas card from Jean Charest here. It's got him, his grandchildren. They're so cute. Two little baby here as well. So there we go. See, like I said, even the past politicians, they know. They send the cards.
Okay, so how many political... I used to get a lot of them, but I guess given some of the things I say about politicians here, that's kind of dried up. How many do you get, Tasha?
So far, Krista Freeland is her card comes, I think, because the person who owned my house before like was must have been a friend or something. So I always get a card from her, bizarrely. So I get a card. I have a card from my local MP, actually, is now Evan Solomon. I haven't seen a card yet, so I'm waiting for that. But I always had one before from the local MP. I have Jean Charest's card here. Councillor Chris Moyes usually sends cards. So I'm sort of, it's usually about four or five. But they come like with sort of trickling regularity, right? Over the, but I think because of the mail this year, so far I only have two of those five. So, yeah.
Okay, wait. Sorry to interrupt. This just in. I have a text from Barty who says that she has bought postal stamps at 20% off
really?
Several times, but she doesn't say when. She says she's using stamps that once cost 40 cents. Barty, I don't think those stamps will not go where they're going.
But the stamps don't have the amount on them anymore. They're always blank.
Yeah.
Are they? I didn't
know. Yeah,
they haven't said the amount on them for years now. They're just, just a stamp.
Yeah,
just
so you can use them whenever. Yeah. I just don't know if they expire. Like that's a good point. Do they expire like certain gift cards? Like they expire?
Best kept secret. Well done, Canada Post, for making sure none of us know about the discounted stamps. Thank you for that. Thank you so much. also the politicians. Like they should not be sending Christmas cards. Seriously, it's basically a marketing material.
Exactly.
That's not cool. That is not okay to use our money to send us a card about them reminding us that there are elected officials so we can vote for them again because we have this artificial sense that they care. I think that's disgusting. Stop that.
Wait a minute. Wait, there's more people. We have 3 minutes left or so. This is from Debbie in Niagara. Costco is cheaper for stamps. If they have a P on them, they never expire, even if rates go up. Okay, except how many stamps, discounted stamps, do you have to buy to make the Costco membership worth it?
A lot.
Okay, but people, if you have a Costco membership, go look for stamps that have a P. And they will be discounted. And, and Nina in Toronto, with 2 minutes to go, says, I love your panel today. Lots of fun. Listen to you all. And this is great to get together and have a relaxed show. Happy holidays. Okay. So it's good to have something different, an alt free-for-all Friday some of the time. So I'm going to go around once more and find out what the fun, relaxed panel is planning for the weekend. So, Liz, let's start with you. What are you going to do?
Oh, okay. Worst choice to pick me. Oh. I don't have anything fun or relaxed planned, I don't think. My son and daughter just came home from university, so fun and relaxed don't necessarily go into the equation right at the moment. I'm going to work on it, though. I'm going to be inspired by the other folks on the panel.
Okay. Dean, fun and relaxed.
Fun and relaxed. Going to an outdoor Christmas market, holding my wife's hand tonight. We're going to go for a walk and stroll down the main historic street of Collingwood and enjoy that. And then, of course, I'm on the air this weekend, garden show, and I'm on the air Sunday night. So my busy time on the air is usually the weekends.
Okay, well, I hope it's not pouring rain or snow squalls in your outdoor event. Okay, Tasha, what are you doing this weekend?
So I'm heading to Montreal tomorrow for one appearance with Radio Canada, but also a Christmas party for charity a friend of mine has every year at Saturday night. And then Sunday, I'm going to see other friends of mine in Montreal because I grew up there and I miss everyone still. And then Monday, more friends and an office Christmas party of a company that I do some work with. And and then after eating and drinking for 3 straight days, I fly home on Tuesday and then start the whole thing with my daughter and my mom for the holidays the next day. It'll be pretty crazy.
There you go.
And I want to hang out with Tasha.
I was going to say,
come Tasha, along. It's fine. Come.
Tasha totally has the best plans. So I was going to add mine, but they certainly don't top Tasha's. They don't even come close.
So, Tasha, don't forget, we are all available as a plus one.
Yeah.
Okay.
On that note, we're going to wrap things up. Next week, we have our annual Best of Free for All Friday running. So it will be 2026, people, before we are back with a fresh Free for All Friday. And I think, you know what? I think even when the elves stop messing with the phone system, we're going to keep this text thing. Even as
I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. That's the way to go.
Yep. That's the way to go. And in the meantime, have a great weekend. Merry Christmas. Happy Hanukkah. And thank you so much to Dean Holland, Liz West, and Tasha Carradine.
Thanks.
Happy holidays.
Happy holidays, everybody.
Merry Christmas.
Okay. And I'm Libby Znaimer. And that's it for Free for All Friday for the day and for the week. And I will be back here on Monday. And we will talk then.
You're listening to an exclusive podcast of Fight Back on Zoomer Radio, heard weekdays from noon to one. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.